Here we go. Except for we need audio. Yeah. Macy, do your job. You have one job.
You have one job. Is that a meme?
That's what I said. She's saying you had one job.
One job. You one still job. Couldn't do it.
And you still left it up.
That's how I've been feeling lately. Yeah? One job to do. Stay alive. Not be depressed and not
have anxiety. Your job is to stay alive. It's not necessarily your job to not be depressed or have anxiety because that's out of your control.
I will not worry about things I cannot control.
Facts.
Affirmation of the day.
Yes. So, and even through depression and anxiety, your one job is to stay alive. That's all.
I'm killing it at that.
You are, but you're also killing it at sleep, talking on the phone.
And almost fainting.
That's,
I swear, Mercury's in retrograde or something because...
Dude, did the eclipse make you, like, sick as hell?
Yes, a lot of people...
Death.
Especially, I heard, if you were on your period while that happened, I was.
Was it awful?
It was like...
All hell broke loose?
Yes. Yeah.
No, I felt like my... I guess it's kind of like vertigo, like your whole equilibrium is messed up. Mm-hmm. So sounds are weird, lights are weird, just this love feeling, like eyes are weird. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Well, it made me feel not good at all. And then I had a terrible, terrible headache. Like,
it's like your brain doesn't know what it's doing, so it just hurts.
Yeah, like it's just going to explode.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people did not feel good. There's something in the air. And
it's the universe.
It's the universe. But yeah, we took off last week because I was having a mental breakdown. A good old minty.
Hey, I'm just glad it's finally you and not me.
Oh my gosh. I just cried for a good 2 weeks.
You needed it.
I guess so. And I gotta give myself a little more grace. Like,
you do.
I'm
you're alive. Human and you're a badass human, yeah. So
last week was a break, but this week
back at it,
and this is such a crazy one. Like,
it's so good though,
it's
but
so
it's
so crazy
wild.
Yeah
I'm excited too. Wait, why do we get excited over murder?
It's just...
It's fascinating.
We're freaks, I guess.
Yeah, I mean... That, yeah.
Freaks among freaks, though, because all of our listeners love it, too. I mean, we're just all weirdos out here together.
Yep.
And loving it. Love it.
Mm.
Okay, this one is called The Fast Food Murderer. And you may have heard of this. You may not have. This was in the 90s-ish in Nashville. So... Maybe pull that back up out of your memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's get into it. Born in Fort Worth, Texas. That's where Taylor was born.
Uh-huh.
He could be a serial killer.
TF Dub.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's not a serial killer.
Seriously.
I feel like I would have sniffed that out by now.
Probably.
He's not. Yeah.
Because serial killers, or killers, murderers in general, are not that smart.
Most of the time.
Yeah. So, yeah. Born in Fort Worth, Texas on November 12th, 1957, Paul Dennis Reed was kind of a troubled kid from the start. His parents divorced when he was like 3 years old, and he had two sisters, Linda and Janet, and he kind of grew up just like bouncing between his mom's house, his dad's house, and getting into trouble. Like, he started showing signs of aggression and doing like odd things to hurt people, like signs,
yeah,
that something is
not right.
Yeah, his father was an alcoholic, so when he was in his father's care, he spent a lot of time with his paternal grandmother, so his dad's mom, and she reported like weird stuff that he would do. Like, he would put tacks on her chair and like spray her down with a water hose, lock her in a room, catch her bed on fire as she's in it and sleeping.
If somebody even attempted to do that to any of my grandmothers or great-grandmothers, we would have been dead. Like, and people would have forgot we existed. No one would have cared.
You're gonna get your ass beat.
That's 1,000%.
Did you get spankings a lot as a kid?
I got spankings, but not a lot of them. And I will say, everyone I got, I for dang sure deserved. And there were a lot of them that I didn't get that I did deserve.
Oh.
Like, I deserved more than I got.
Mm.
But I got enough to know I got spanked, you know, or whipped. Like, yeah, but I deserved every one of them.
My parents, they only had to spank me very few times because I'm so, like, I didn't want to get...
Disappoint.
I didn't want to disappoint. I didn't want to get spanked again.
Yeah.
So all I needed was a look.
Yeah.
It's the look that you...
Yeah, I feel like you get to an age where that's...
Yeah.
Where it's like the tone of the voice or the look is like, okay. Because that's how my kids are. Like, I just look at them or say their name in a specific tone. And they're like, oh, shoot. Okay, mom is serious. Yep. But no, most of the spankings I got were... most definitely when me and my brother would fight, because we couldn't, like, leave each other alone. Like, we were play together all the time. We were tight, super tight, but we fought, like, gnarly, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fought. I'm surprised one of us didn't lose an eyeball or, like, get an ear cut off or something, because there were times that I wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, we were gnarly, but... that's usually what would get us in trouble.
Yeah.
Because we could just get each other so mad.
See, and I didn't have that. I didn't have anyone to get in trouble with.
Yeah.
So I was always like, just compliant.
Just there.
So Paul, he was bouncing between, you know, family stuff. He wasn't doing very well in school. He had some behavioral issues. He did have signs of a learning disability. And by the time he was 16, his mother had kicked him out of her house. His father also kicked him out of his house for allegedly sexually assaulting someone in their family. 16 and all that.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's alarming.
Mm-hmm.
He caught his first charge by breaking into cars and stealing them. I'm assuming hot wiring them.
Yeah.
He got off from those charges with 3 years probation instead of, like, getting his crap together. He started to steal cars by using, like, getting people and holding them at gunpoint and then stealing their car. So instead of just, like, breaking into a car and stealing it, he was like, oh, I guess it's a better idea if I hold a gun to their head and make them give me their car.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was also writing fraudulent checks, so, which, in comparison, writing fraudulent checks, yes, it's a crime, no, you shouldn't do it, but it's not a violent crime, like, holding someone at gunpoint and stealing their car, or sexually assaulting people.
Mm-hmm.
In 1984, he was charged with robbing 4 restaurants and a hardware store. He was sentenced to 20 years, and he was released after serving only 7 years. And then when he got out, he started working as a truck driver. I'm like, oh, Lord, red flag, red flag, red flag. He got in a really bad accident driving his truck, which allowed him to get workman's compensation. And he got that for 2 years. Plus, he got, like, a settlement sum of $25,000. That's a lot of money, even today. And in the 80s, $25,000.
You hit the jackpot.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, are you ready for this?
What is he going to spend his money on?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
He blew through the $25,000 on, you'll never guess what.
Drugs.
That's what one would think, right?
Cars.
No.
House.
No.
Girlfriend.
No.
No. Motorcycle. Toys.
No.
What?
He blew $25,000 on plastic surgery for himself because he got a cowboy makeover.
He wanted to be a cowboy.
He wanted to be a cowboy, so he spent $25,000 on plastic surgery. And he took his guitar And what voice he had to get lessons, to learn to sing and play said guitar. Mm-hmm. And he moved to the country music capital of the world, Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee!
Woo! He quickly learned that not everyone with a cowboy hat and a handlebar mustache, because he was the guy with the mustache.
You can picture him. Like,
Yeah, so the guy with the hat, the mustache, and the guitar, like, doesn't mean that you make it in Music City. But because of that, he took a job as a line cook and a busboy at Shoney's.
I love Shoney's.
My mom worked at Shoney's.
Where does Shoney's go? I feel like they're nowhere.
I think there's still one in Athens.
I miss Shoney's. The bear.
The biscuits and gravy were fire.
The breakfast bar, the dinner bar, everything was, mac and cheese, off the charts. I miss Shoney's.
Mac and cheese.
It's my favorite dish ever.
It's like, did you only eat like 5 things?
I know.
You're getting better though.
I am. I'm trying new things.
So, took a job at Shoney's. Man, that's messed up. Because he's not a safer, nicer, healthy person. So, what if he worked with my mom? I need to ask her.
Did she work in Nashville?
No, she probably, I should ask her. She either worked at the one off Hicks and Pike or maybe the one in Athens or Sweetwater or something.
Yeah. Shoney's, man.
But then he started, going back to and reverting to his old ways of making money. So, stealing cars and robbing people and places and things. You know, he's a winner. Yeah. A real winner.
Real catch this one. So, about 11 days before he would subsequently lose his job at Shoney's for multiple offenses, including this reason, the reason he got fired was because he threw a plate across the dining room, injuring a coworker. So, 11 days before he got fired, he's like, probably up, ready to go, like, feeling it, feeling the pressure. He stops at a Captain D's. It's a Sunday morning, February 16th, 1997 at 7 a.m. He parked in the Captain D's parking lot on Lebanon Road and waited for the workers to open the business. 16-year-old Sarah Jackson, who lived like less than a half mile from the restaurant, she was just walking to work. She'd only worked there for like 9 months. And the store's manager, 25-year-old Stephen Hampton, were walking to open the Captain D's. Sarah was a sweet girl, excited to have her first part-time job, and had only worked there for about 9 months. Steven was a father of 3, and he kind of worked his way up. Like, he'd worked there for 10 years as, like, bus boy.
Everything.
Yeah, he's done it all. And he,
the real restaurant dream.
Yep, exactly. Paul forced Steven to open the safe, stealing nearly $2,000, and then forced the two of them in the freezer and shot them execution style. He then went into the manager's office and stole the surveillance tapes, like the literal tapes. And an eyewitness had spotted Steven talking to this man just before they had gone into the store. Like, everyone knew Steven worked at Captain D's.
Yeah.
Everyone knew him. He recognized him. And so they were able to have a sketch. And so their bodies were found by a coworker who was, like, coming for his shift, like, lunch shift, and couldn't find anybody. Like, the doors were locked or something. And so he called 911, and they found the bodies.
This is gnarly.
Captain D's. Dude, Captain D's. When's the last time you had a Captain D's?
Captain D's.
Mine's like 15, 20 years. I don't eat fish.
Probably since I was in high school. No, I think I've had it a couple times since then. But I used to get it was like this grilled, or like, grilled fish plate after school, like, and rice and the veggies, like, every day.
With
plenty of salt and butter, it was great.
Yeah. Those, like, Krispies. Was that Captain D's or Long John Silver's?
Long John Silver's, okay. For sure. Long John Silver's. I love you, Captain D's, but Long John Silver's is the shit.
I don't eat either of them.
I have not eaten. I couldn't tell you really the last time I ate fast food. Like, no.
That's good. You shouldn't eat fast food.
I can't. Like, my blood sugar. Dude, I will have to sleep the rest of the day if I eat that junk. Mm-hmm. But not doesn't mean it's not good.
Oh, so good. Good going in, just
sometimes
in.
When like the kids want McDonald's, I'm like, okay, yeah, and I'll get a fry. Oh my god, my mouth's watering thing about yeah. McDonald's fries. Mm-hmm. So good.
So good.
Also, you say Lebanon?
Mm-hmm.
Lebanon.
Lebanon?
Mm-hmm. Lebanon's like the country. But of course, it's also just the country, the redneck, the southern laziness, Lebanon.
Lebanon.
Even though it looks like Lebanon.
Well, that's how my dyslexic brain would read it, Lebanon.
No, you're saying it properly. It's, I think we say it wrong. Like, being from, it's kind of like people want to say Nashville or yeah, Mary, Nashville. Maryville. It's Maryville, yeah. Nashville, Knoxville. Yeah, yeah, Whitwell, not Whitwell. You know, it's like
I'm just over pronunciating, saying it the proper way.
If I did not have like really close friends and spent a lot of time in Lebanon, I would also call it Lebanon too. It's just, it's like people also try to pronounce Ottawa, Ottawa. It's Ottawa.
It's Ottawa.
Like some people, Ottawa.
Ottawa. I'm like, are you serious right now?
I think the right way is Ottawa, mm-hmm. but. No, it's Ottawa. Yeah. Ottawa. Anyways, so about a month after the incident at Captain D's happened, it was the evening of March 23rd, and they were at a McDonald's on the same road, Lebanon Road, which turns into Lebanon Pike. But this is in the Hermitage, Tennessee, which is actually a very historical
part
of the country. I believe, if I'm correct, Andrew Jackson lived there.
I saw Beyonce there, so that's all.
I Wait, in the Hermitage?
No, we stayed in Hermitage. Oh, okay. Stayed with my friend's parents in Hermitage, and yeah. We went and saw the concert at the stadium.
Bridgestone? When? Because I think I'm
last right. July.
Oh, okay. I went to Beyonce more than a few years ago. She's great.
Oh, she's great.
She's fantastic.
She was 2 hours late in the hot sun. I thought I was going to die.
Oh, heck no.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were at Titan Stadium outside? Oh.
In July.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. At one point, I quit sweating. I was like, I don't have any.
You need water.
I had to go get water. It was bad.
Yeah, that's rough. It gets hot in Tennessee, y'all. Hot. All right, so this time it's at a McDonald's. The disrespect, man. Why is he going to go to all the fast food restaurant?
It's a fast food murderer.
This is less than 3 miles away from the Captain D's.
And like a month later.
The nerve.
Hello.
So he waited until closing time. But he was desperate for money because he'd been fired from Shoney's. And at gunpoint, he forced Andrea Brown, who was 17, and Ronald Santiago, who's 27, Robert Sewell and Jose Antonio Ramirez Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long name.
Yep.
He forced them back into the store. He shot Andrea, Ronald, and Robert and killed them all. When Paul turned the gun on Jose, the gun jammed. So Paul then proceeded to take his knife and use it to stab Jose 17 times. Jose played dead. While Paul robs the store, he stole $3,000 in cash and then obviously, again, took the surveillance tapes. When Paul left Jose, Jose was able to crawl to the phone to call 911. He did survive and he was able to give an even better composite sketch to the artist. And that sketch, or like his recollection and what he told him, was actually like very similar to the one that had happened at the original sketch from Captain D's. Mm-hmm. So that seemed to work, and Jose actually testified at the trial for Mr. Fast Food Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Person that puts tax on his grandmother's stool.
Psychopath. I feel like you can tell early on, and you can fix it early on. You can't fix it later, though.
Yeah, sometimes you can never fix it, but you definitely have a better chance early.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Then about 5 months later, on the evening of August 23rd, 1997, Paul waited outside of a Baskin-Robbins.
That was my first shop.
I know. You love Baskin-Robbins.
I did not love that job. Well, I loved the job. I did not like the person I worked for.
Yeah.
That's why I only worked there for 4 hours.
Yeah. Never even. I can't believe they left you by yourself on your first day.
Dude, I didn't know anything.
I know. It's insane.
I had to like, and back then there wasn't like you could Google on your phone, like telling my age. There was no like internet like that. Like it was still dial up and stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't know my ass from my elbow. Mm-hmm. Like, no. I never even went back for my paycheck. That whole pregnancy was rough because I didn't want to go there and get the chocolate milkshakes I so desperately craved.
Yeah, I bet. So good. So he's waiting at this Baskin-Robbins on Wilma Rudolph Boulevard in Clarksville, Tennessee. At closing, he forced 16-year-old Michelle Mace and 21-year-old Angela Holmes into the store. He cleared the safe, stole the tapes, same thing. But this time, he kidnaps Michelle and Angela, taking them to a local state park. It's called Dunbar Cave State Park. And there's like a lake and all this beautiful scenery and hiking. And he kills them. He cuts their throats by the lake. The bodies were found the next day by a hiker and their dog.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Okay, so shortly after this spree of killings, he obviously needed more money. I'm also wondering, like, what are you spending all this money on in such a short amount of time? Because you already got the plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm. He's got to buy his demo tapes. He's got to buy his stamps for sending out his demo. Girl, oh my what God. Are you thinking?
A disc track.
Oh, that's funny.
Holy cow. I bet. Wonder if he ever stood on the side of the strip in Panama City and handed out
demos.
Mixtapes, yeah. Like,
probably.
On Broadway probably, in Nashville.
Probably gave him away at Shoney's. Like,
yeah. And with your Happy Meal at McDonald's, mm-hmm. you get
yeah, a mixtape.
Oh my God. He's a lunatic, mm-hmm. man. Okay. So, anyways, after he goes on the spree of killing everyone that he has, he needs more money. He decides that he's going to visit his old manager from Shoney's. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. This is 45-year-old Mitch Roberts. So they talk on Mitch's front porch, and Mitch informs Paul that he's not going to rehire him. He's like, no, man. It's like, you threw plates at people in the restaurant. Like, you can't get your job back. Paul then pulls out a knife and handcuffs. Where did he get the handcuffs?
This is a new tool for me. Probably because he's a big man. Like, he's a 45-year-old man and not, like, kids at working at a restaurant.
But I'm still like, where did the handcuffs come from? Like, where do you just acquire?
Yeah, where do you buy handcuffs?
You know what?
At a sex shop?
Yeah, Hustler. You know, downtown Nashville, yeah. Hustler. Or, what are the ones on, like, the side of I-24?
Allure.
Yeah, or, Loves.
Yeah.
Like, not the gas station, yeah. Loves. Oh, man.
There's Cupids.
So Cupids, yeah. That's a good one. Oh, we have a lot of those, actually.
We have a lot of sex shops. It's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. But handcuffs, you know what that makes me think of? When Bentley was really little, he would not, like, handcuffs were handcuffs. Handcuffs. I'm going to handcuff you.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, you get, like, you know, a little set that's like a little sheriff's vest and badge or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it would come with, like, little fake toy handcuffs. And he would be like, where are my handcuffs at? I'm going to handcuff you.
It's so cute.
That's so cute. It's so cute. Oh, my God.
His little voice.
Yeah. It's little country voice. It was so country. I'm going to handcuff you.
I'm going to handcuff you. That's so cute.
It is. It was so cute.
Oh, cute.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so Paul pulls out a knife and handcuffs. And he tries to abduct Mitch, like this grown man. Mitch struggled with him. He pushed him off the porch, and he was actually able to get inside of his house and lock his door. He called 911, and by the time law enforcement showed up, Paul had called Mitch, and he apologized to him.
I'm so sorry. I just tried to abduct you.
And he was still asking for his job back. He's like, hey, man. Really sorry that I just, you know, pulled my knife and tried to put you in handcuffs. And God knows what else I was going to do after that. But, like, can we forget about that? And even though it just happened, you know, 15 minutes ago, and you think I could get my job back?
Yeah.
Like, make it make sense. The math ain't mathing, y'all.
No, it's
okay,
not.
So then, after he's apologizing stuff, the cops tell Mitch to instruct Paul, like, okay, yeah, maybe you can get your job back. Like, come back and talk to me and we'll figure something out. This moron, Paul, literally comes back. He comes back to the guy's house. And then the cops were able to arrest him. And they obviously had evidence and, like, fingerprints. And that all tied him to other murders. So, it technically, his name, Paul Reed. Dennis. Paul Dennis Reed Jr.
Yeah.
7 murders, one attempted murder.
Because Jose lived.
Because he needed his job at Shoney's back that bad. That he went back. And he asked for his job back again.
So sorry. I just tried to abduct you. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm not
having a bad day.
But I promise it won't happen.
It won't happen.
And I swear I'm different from when I was throwing plates across the
Shoney's 5 minutes ago. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Dude.
So Paul, in his like trial or whatever, he tried to pull like mental health card, which is
probably
a card to be pulled.
It's probably true.
It's probably true.
Because bro seems like a lunatic.
Yeah. He suffered from illusions,
paranormal activity, too.
Probably. Paranoia and erratic behaviors. The judge found him capable for trial, and in April of 1999, he received 7 death sentences, the most in Tennessee history. That's crazy. 7 death sentences.
That's crazy.
And he didn't die by lethal injection.
No, but I also like what you describe, like illusions, paranoia, erratic behavior. Like, you know, there's a term called schizophrenia.
Like, that comes out in boys earlier.
But like, also like, was he not diagnosed with that?
Right off the bat, yeah.
Because he suffered from illusions, paranoia, erratic behavior.
Mm-hmm. Hello. But this was the 90s. I mean, hate to give it that, but...
Well, he might have also never actually seen a doctor. Right. Maybe just him and his attorneys were saying that that's what he suffered from. But also, if you're going to pull that card or say that that's what's, like, it's mental health and you're not well, then you should probably get a doctor's diagnosis.
Yeah.
Like,
Seven death sentences. The most in Tennessee history, which I think is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy because Tennessee is not... It's
We're
like
not
a,
opposed to it.
Yeah, it's like one of the states that's like kind of gnarly about it.
Well, his lethal injection was scheduled for 2008. He was sentenced in April of 1999, but he was scheduled to die in 2008. But his story made national news again with the controversy of lethal injections in Tennessee. There was like a bill that was put a pause on it or something.
Yep.
It's back and going, I'm sure. And in 2013, he was still on death row. He was admitted to the hospital and spent 2 weeks fighting for his life, losing to pneumonia in 2013.
So he died from pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
So we were wondering, we were curious. Obviously, nurses and doctors are like the baddest humans ever.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, majority of the thought... For me, when it comes to that, is because it doesn't matter who their patient is, or what their patient has done or not done, or how they're
treated.
Yeah, like they take their job so serious, and I feel like it's so important and so respect. Like I have so much respect for that, but I'm curious if some like we don't. I'm sure we could look it up, but like. People that are on death row, especially somebody that's, like, facing 7 death sentences. So, like, basically, he's on death row. So what did they think? That if the first lethal injection doesn't kill him, he gets 7 chances? Like, why? I guess maybe to make a statement? I don't know. But, like, while he has pneumonia and, like, you know, at some point, the doctors know that he's not going to win this battle. And then it's not hospice because he's in a hospital.
He's in like a county hospital.
Right. But like, do they give
pain
medication or any medication to make it more comfortable for someone who is for sure going to die by natural causes to make their transition, I guess, over to the other side or make their death?
Does it hurt when you get lethal injection?
I think they... No. I
just put you to sleep?
Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to hurt. That's why they replaced the electric chair.
That was my
lethal injection
nightmare. I was like, I cannot do anything bad because I do not want to sit in the electric chair. That was my thought when I was little.
That's why we do true crime. Because yeah. I had weird things. Weird. Like, why did we think about stuff like that? That's so bad.
I have escape plans. I have everything laid out.
Yeah, but like, why? Like, or actually, what? Like, would they have made him as comfortable as possible? Because I'm thinking, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to say this and it's going to sound terrible, mm-hmm. but it's not that I want one way or the other. It's just I'm very curious. Like, if somebody, a normal, not on death row citizen, is going to die from pneumonia or cancer or an infection of something, like, their job at that point, when you know you're going to die, is to make you as comfortable as possible, to make it as painless as possible, mm-hmm. All of the things, right?
But if you're sitting on death row...
But if you're sitting on death row, do you have the same access and privileges to that? Is it... If you do have access to that, I would imagine the doctors and nurses would do their due diligence to make sure that that you get the same care. Mm-hmm. But is that a privilege, or do people on death row have access to the comfortability of dying from natural causes?
Yeah.
You know?
Probably not as much as like a regular Joe Blow.
Person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you got to think about like a county...
Yeah, and what they have access, like, resources to, yeah, and stuff.
Their resources are low. Their...
Do you think someone on death row should be provided medication to have a comfortable and pleasant? And now we're not saying that somebody's going in there and stabbing them to death, or yeah, that they're going in there and like they're not getting oxygen when they need it, or you know, water and fluid. They're not being restricted of anything that they need, obviously. But do you think that if someone's on death row, that they... Number one, I want to know if there's a law. Like, is there something that says, like, someone on death row, like, they are not afforded the same medication or the same extra comfort,
mm-hmm,
than, you know, a citizen with those rights and privileges and whatever outside? Number two, do you think I think nurses and doctors will, to the best of their ability, which I think is exactly why those people are in those positions, mm-hmm, but like, what do you think they should?
If they have resources, like, I know county hospitals probably don't have the same resources and technology and equipment and space and doctors and nurses. So if they have, I would want
the ability
to make someone more comfortable in their death, I think that would...
They should. I agree.
They don't, and
it's not their fault.
It's not their fault.
It's not, like, that's just how it is.
It's just how it is.
I want to know, like, if anyone knows, do you think that they might purposely not put those resources in a facility like that?
Maybe.
I want to know. Like, if y'all,
jail.
Yeah, if y'all know this, like, if you're an attorney or if you are a nurse or a doctor, like, if you've had a loved one that, I want to know.
That's so interesting.
Back again. I want to know if somebody knows.
Yeah. Let us know. If you've ever done that kind of job or know someone, ask them, you know.
I'm just very curious.
I know.
Very, very curious.
I've known people that work in jails, but haven't really like asked them personal questions like that.
If you're gonna be an asshole, be a funny one. Don't do meth. Keep your pistol in your pocket and be kind to each other. This is the Expired Podcast.